Welcome back to Art of the Song. We're talking with legendary musician and songwriter Leon Russell.
So let's talk about this new project, the one that you're out touring. How did it come about, and what's different about this one?
Well, after I did that record with Elton, I had the president of EMI and the president of Universal come up to me. They both wanted me to do an album. So, you know, I mean, okay, I decided I'd start on it and called up Johnny Barbas, who was my manager at the time, also Elton's manager. I said, well, get me some money. I'm going to do this record. And he said, well, Elton wants you to have a producer. I've never had producers. I always made my own records. And I think Elton's always had producers. And he's been much more successful at it than I am. But it was kind of odd for me because I was trying to think who I would get that I wouldn't get mad at in the middle of the deal and fight and walk out and do all that stuff. So a lot of names came up. But I was in Montrose, Switzerland, some kind of a jazz event. I don't know what I was doing there, actually, but I ran into Tommy LaPuma, who I'd known for 45 or 50 years. Like I said, I met him when he was promotion man at Liberty and asked him if he had time to do it. And he said, I'll make time. He's a pretty powerful producer, really. I thought they ought to be impressed with that. I was a little bit worried in the beginning because of the records of his that he had made. I thought he might suffer a certain amount of jazz damage. And I myself am not a jazz. I mean, I did belong to the Columbia Record Club, and I did get Benny Goodman and J.J. Johnson and Kay Winding, just by accident, I suppose. But I never have thought much about jazz. It always seemed to me that a lot of the jazz players, the spontaneous melodies were important to the exclusion of time and other factors, which I couldn't quite relate to. But anyway, Tommy said that he would do it, and I spent so much money on it. I'm at 15 studios in my 45 years there. And I spent so much money on studios, I didn't have enough money to spend on musicians, and I ended up playing everything myself, largely. So this album cost more than all my albums put together that I cut in my life. And we did it at Capitol Records. We did it with Al Smith, and great engineer, great studios. I mean, I've worked on Bobby Darin records there and different people, but I never could afford that place. It's too expensive, and I couldn't afford a 25-piece band. That was expensive. So it was very different from that standpoint. When we first started talking, Tommy and I said, well, I'd always imagined when I'm playing the ensemble on my piano that it was Count Basie actually playing, and there'd be the little obligatos in between. But I was fascinated. I thought he had a huge, his ensemble just sounded fantastic. So Tommy showed up with one of Count Basie's principal writing guys that had written his charts for 10 years, played bass for him, stood next to him and gave him his cues. John Clayton, his name is. I don't know, when they ran the first song down, I thought to myself, boy, this chart is too tough. These guys are not going to be able to play this. But then they played it the second time and it was perfect. Come to find out that is a full-time existing band. They play together all the time. And they play on shows and different things, and John Clayton uses them on his records. So I was a little bit rattled because, John had played with Count Basie for 10 years. The drummer, who's the other name in the band, played for Oscar Peterson. You know, those people are real musicians. I'm an illusionist. I just create the illusion of being a great piano player. And those people actually are great piano players. So I was pretty rattled the whole time and found myself playing a lot of octaves. Dun-dee-dee. But it was great, though. I mean, I love to sit there and hear that music, you know, and that many horns and stuff. It was fantastic.
ever treat me sweet and gentle the way she should. I got it bad, and that ain't good. My whole heart is sentimental, not made of wood. I got it bad, and that ain't good. When the weekend's over, Monday rolls around, I end up like I started out, just crying my heart out. She don't love me like I love her. Nobody could. I got it bad, and that ain't good. Good intention tell me to save my tears. I'm so glad I'm mad about her, 'cause I can't live without her. Lord above me, make her love me the way she should. I got it bad, and that ain't good. I got it bad, and that just ain't good.
That was Leon Russell, backed by the Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra, singing the Duke Ellington standard, I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good.
How did you choose the songs to go on the album?
Well, we just had conversations. You know, Tommy just came down to Nashville a couple of times, and we talked on the phone. He sent me tapes of stuff that he liked, and I discovered that he really was a blues hound like me. That jazz thing I was worried about was more a front or something. I don't know. I remember when I was in Brazil, me and my wife were walking around, and I was singing One Ton Tomato all the time I was down there. He said, oh, yeah, I cut that with the Sandpipers. That was so great. They were supposed to do a narration on it, and I got this DJ to do it, and he went out and did it, and he sounded like a DJ. And I said, no, do it like this. And I showed him how to do it, and the engineer recorded it, and that was me on the record doing the narration. Yeah. So it was really not much I could ever mention to him that he hadn't been there and done that. It was kind of interesting.
And there's a couple of new original tunes on the record?
Yes, a couple of songs that I wrote. People think that I kind of went away or something for years, but I mean, I just lost contact with the public. I was always fond of misdirecting the press in whatever way that I could, or not talking to them at all. But I was making records the whole time. I had about 10 that I put out on the internet, you know, not with any promotion or anything, but those two songs were on those records. So I sent him a bunch of my original songs, and he liked those two. I sent him a Big Lips, and my daughters were trying to talk me out of it. He said, "Dad, don't send that to him. That's too nasty." And that was one of his favorite ones, so...
Leon Russell singing Big Lips. I'm John Dillon with Viv Nesbitt, and this is Art of the Song, Creativity Radio.
Leon, is there anything that you would offer up to somebody who's trying to find their creative outlet?
Well, I suppose one of them would be don't give up. Real jobs are a lot worse than songwriting. But it has to do with that one thing that I told you about. You can't be the audience and the artist at the same time. You have to figure out a way to separate these. Like the exercise in that book said, get up every day for 2 weeks and write as many pages as you can. Don't worry about poetry. Don't worry about songs. Just write anything that's on your mind. And you should have 20 pages a day at least. But don't read them. Don't read them for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, read them and pick out the stuff that looks like titles or it looks like that might be a good idea. And that takes a lot of that performer and audience simultaneous stuff away, which it absolutely does.
We've talked today about the tremendous inequality that happens through this sort of dual nature of the haves, the have-nots, the races, age. You know, a union that didn't, that in order to join, you have to not be working for a year.
That's pretty weird, isn't it?
It's really weird. And it just feels like that you've unified a certain level of things for yourself. And I'm wondering how you did that in order to navigate all those disparate ideas, whether they were racial or classist or any of the different things.
Well, I appreciate that thing that you guys do, you interviewers, for me, which is give the impression that I know what I'm doing, which is absolutely not the case. You know, I do whatever it is. I'm trying to make some money and make a living and so forth. And a lot of times I can't say that I know exactly what I'm doing. However, there was a time when I was writing that I set out to write standards and actually was successful. Song for You, I wanted to write a blues song that Frank Sinatra and Ray Charles could sing. Those were the guidelines. That's what I wanted to write. And I had that guy, Doc, saxophone player for Tower of Power, came up to me one day and said, "Leon, how do you get all those people to sing your songs?" I said, "I don't know. You know, it comes out on my record. I don't do anything except make the record, which I guess is the demo. But standard writing is different than pop writing. I can't tell you really what the difference is, I don't think."
And yet at the same time, you've, with the union, you were recording a very special album with the king of the pop realms, and they've been recorded by jazz artists and R&B artists and country artists. You've cut your own country albums. These things just flow out of you. Genre non-specific, it's just music.
Genre non-specific, that's a good name for a band. Well, I don't know. I didn't play in a hillbilly band till I went to California. And I have to tell you, there's many more hillbillies in California than there is in Oklahoma. I don't care what anybody says. But I never was in a band like that in Oklahoma. I played piano bars and different kinds of standards, I suppose. I played a lot of those tunes. As a matter of fact, several of the songs on this album, like The Masquerade Is Over, I've played that for many singers. The first time I sung it was when I was making my demo to give to Tommy. I never had sung that song before. And so when I was making the record, that was probably the second time I sang it. But he got so excited. I sent it to him. He got so excited. He said, "Oh, I've been running around all over Manhattan playing this for my friends." I don't know. John Denver got it right. Life is a funny, funny riddle.
Truer words. Leon Russell, thank you so much for...
Is it over?
Unless I could sit here. I mean, honestly, we could sit
we could keep going if you want.
If you, I was like, I just feel like we could just sort of muse around until they made you go on stage. But we don't want to take up your whole time this afternoon and let you
get
your show
tonight.
Well,
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And we'll be sure to keep in touch and let you know when it's going to air and all that. So thanks again.
Well, it's my pleasure.
We'll close today with Leon Russell singing Down in Dixieland. Thanks for listening to Art of the Song, exploring creativity through the lens of music and songwriting.
We all have a song to sing, and we hope this program inspires you to sing yours.
Art of the Song is a labor of love. Our affiliate stations, like the one you're listening to now, received the show free of charge. We're primarily self-supported, and now by a growing number of contributions from listeners like you. We invite you to visit our Patreon page, where you can listen free to recent episodes and learn more about supporting Art of the Song and our creative work. Patreon.com/Art of the Song. That's patreon.com/Art of the Song, all one word.
Our guest this week was Leon Russell. Special thanks goes to Missing Peace Group in Newark, New Jersey.
Art of the Song Creativity Radio is created and hosted by Vivian Nesbitt and John Dillon, and I'm Tim Neninger, editor and producer. Our theme music is Altenair by Daryl Scott, used here by permission from Famous Music and Chuck Wagon Gourmet Music. Program contents copyright 2014, Heliotrope Productions Incorporated. Individual songs may be protected by previous copyrights.